Hello and welcome to Dealcast, the voice of Merger Market, the world's leading publication about mergers and acquisitions. I'm Juliana Needham. I'm a journalist who's been covering M&A for a decade. This is our next instalment of Equity Focus, where we look at equity capital markets news and trends. And now, it's been a bit of a bad year so far for IPOs in some places, but could all that be about to change? To find out more, I'm joined by Sam Kerr, who is the Global ECM Editor. Hi, Sam. Welcome. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me back on.
So could we start with the kind of global picture? We're just past the midpoint of 2025. How are global equities looking? It feels like it's been a bit of a rollercoaster year so far with Liberation Day and the tariffs on again, off again to contend with.
You're absolutely right. It has been. I think what we've seen, which I think is really interesting. So when Liberation Day happened in April, it was one of the worst months for global equity capital markets in since the financial crisis. We tracked the data on Dealogic and such, and we're looking through, and it was an appalling month. Huge drop from the month before, and very low totals. What happened, however, when the pause was introduced at the end of April, was people then got back to work very quickly. And I think the most interesting thing that we're seeing in the established equity markets, so talking about the big benchmark indices, is the ability for investors to ignore what's going on in the news flow. And I feel a little bit like when we speak to people, there is a recognition that volatility and uncertainty and geopolitical headlines are not going to go away. The war in the Middle East is clearly getting hotter, and I think will be probably sustained. Donald Trump is not going anywhere for some period of time, and therefore the ability for something from the White House to disrupt market flows is very high. I think until investors are materially affected in terms of economics, however, people are willing to keep investing in the market. And I think a lot of that is people don't want to be sitting on cash. So reinvesting in shares and stories that you like and strategies that you like, I think is very popular. And in the equity capital markets, which I think is particularly interesting, is a huge amount of demand for large liquid block trades, particularly in Europe. And what we are not seeing is a lot of that demand filter through to the IPO market. So I think what that's showing you is people are happy to take risk on things they can model, things that are very liquid. When it comes to a bit more uncertainty, there is a bit of a reservation among investors to play that. Now, there is some exceptions. The US has seen some very big deals with a lot of success, but they are idiosyncratic cases, I think, so far, rather than something that is broadly spread, perhaps like a market we saw in 21.
Okay, so that's the big picture. Let's have a little look at the regions in a bit more detail. You mentioned Europe there. We're both in Europe, in the UK. It's been a bit of a bad start to the year for IPOs on the London Stock Exchange, with fundraising from IPOs at its lowest level in 30 years. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah, it's been a particularly poor half for London. There was only one significant London IPO. And it certainly has been, certainly when we looked at it in terms of GBP raised, it is, as you say, one of the worst, the worst half of a year for London in the last 30. However, I do feel that isn't telling the whole picture and the whole story. The reason being, I have, in conversations we've had with people in the market, people connected to London Stock Exchange, investors, bankers, advisors across the board, I have to say this is the most optimistic I've heard people be about London since the referendum. And I think people are far, sort of since we left the European Union, let's say. People are talking about a large deal flow of companies looking to come into London. We've already had a very big one sort of soft announced in the form of Visma, HG Capital picking London potentially as the listing location for what would be a significantly sized IPO and a large business. Potentially one of the largest IPOs in Europe next year. So that all is playing into a better story for London. So there could be a little bit of light at the end of what has admittedly been a dark tunnel.
Yeah, I guess it could be the low point. It doesn't help when you've got a range of issues facing companies looking to list in London. And you've also got the boss of AstraZeneca, which is the biggest company on the FTSE 100 by market cap, saying that they might move the main listing to the US.
There was something funny going on with that AstraZeneca story, right? I mean, you know, we wrote an opinion piece on it, and I feel... there might be something political happening. There has clearly been a breakdown in the relationship between AstraZeneca and the government. And this seems to be coming up a lot. The medium by which he chose to leak, or, you know, the people quoted in the story, let's not say it was definitely him because who knows, but maybe the medium by which that story was leaked was to the Times rather than, say, to the Financial Times or one of the big financial papers you would leak to. So perhaps that was more of a message for number 10 than maybe a realistic threat to list in the United States. I mean, certainly when we did the work on the valuation, we found there would be very limited re-rating upside for AstraZeneca to list in the United States. So perhaps, yes, there might have been a bit of game playing there, but, you know, that who knows.
Okay, and then let's look at the rest of Europe. Mixed picture. Autodoc in Germany, a car parts online retailer, which the IPO was pulled just before it was due to list. What went wrong there?
Well, we're seeing certainly in the case of Autodoc and another one that also pulled just before it was meant to price Brainlab, that there is still a lack of high quality investor demand for certain European assets and really for the European IPO market in general. I think the case in Autodoc, I think, was more to do with a pricing issue. Autodoc had a private round in 2024 where Apollo bought a significant stake at a certain valuation. And the talk around the deal was they didn't want to drop lower than the valuation which Apollo acquired its stake at. Now, we don't know where that was coming from, whether it was from Apollo itself, or whether it was coming from anyone, so perhaps others in the company, or whether that was used by the company not wanting to sell under the valuation that Apollo did. But someone within the deal didn't want to go down below that valuation level. That meant that they couldn't really be that flexible on the price. And that's a slight issue, I always think, when you can't be flexible. I mean, if they had been able to go down to maybe, you know, 2 billion, 1.5 billion, perhaps the deal could have got across the line. They could have done a far smaller float and got it away and, you know, then sold more later on. That's often the model that people use. Because they weren't able to go below that floor, I think that meant that the deal was never going to have the strongest book, and people didn't want to price a deal with the risk of it trading down. I think that really does show, however, that the price sensitivity of the investor world is very high at the moment.
Okay, but let's look at slightly better news. We had a Spanish gaming casino company, Sursa, I hope that's how you say it, which started trading yesterday. How's that looking and how did that go?
Let's have a look. So as of now, it feels like it's at IPO price, so at and around, which I think... you can't really read it one way or the other. no great pop, which isn't a good bit of news, but also it's not down, which is better than nothing. So actually, sort of what we would call par for the course, if someone wanted to use a golf term. I'm not a great golfer, but that's how I would read that one. But the fact that the deal got across the line is undone and hasn't traded down is undeniably a positive. We do need companies listing. We do need everyone to see that the IPO product is working. So I think at the moment, let's wait and see how it trades, but it's certainly good the deal got done.
Okay, and moving away from IPOs and looking at wider ECM activity in Europe, if you could just give us a brief roundup of what else is going on with the block trades that you mentioned.
The blocks are where the real business is happening in Europe at the moment. We're seeing incredibly large follow-ons and block trades happening. We're seeing particularly private equity companies coming back to the equity capital markets in order to sell down some of their listed holdings. The reason this being that private equity companies are under increasing pressure to to return capital to their limited partner investors. And one of the easiest ways to get some capital in the door is by selling down a listed exposure. You know, you don't have a long sale process. It's not like an IPO, or you don't have to find someone else to buy it. You can come to market overnight and sell a very large chunk of stock. We've seen particularly EQT take advantage of this through selling down Galderma. Apollo Global Management has been very, very active as well. They had an asset called Lottomatica, an Italian gaming company, which they completely sold out of a couple of months ago, last month, and through a very, very large block trade. So actually, we're seeing these big sponsors use that mechanism in order to bring capital in the door and to really start to monetize and show LPs that they can monetize those assets, because obviously that has been a big debate in private equity and is a real pressure point now of the length of some of the holdings within the private equity universe and the inability to efficiently return capital to the LPs.
Next up, let's have a look at the Asia Pacific region. Some big news with Shein filing for its IPO in Hong Kong, which London was hoping to get but couldn't quite get there. Could you talk a little bit about that and any other ECM activity in APAC?
The Shein case is an interesting one. I think it's been widely reported, so we don't need to go into it in too much detail here. But there is certainly an issue between the disclosures that the FCA wants in a London IPO prospectus around risk, particularly around supply chain risk, is different to what Chinese regulators will allow Shein to put in an IPO prospectus. So I think that appears to be the nub of the issue. In Hong Kong, they can get away with an IPO prospectus that doesn't have that full risk disclosure list that London would require. And that seems to be why the deal is happening in Hong Kong. Beyond that, I think perhaps investors in Hong Kong, they might be better suited to that market because of the reasons that are around Shein. And, you know, again, it's all very public and it's all been widely reported on. But I think perhaps that does potentially cater that deal to Hong Kong more than, say, London or even the US, where it was obviously originally trying to list.
Okay. And what about the rest of activity in the Asia Pacific region?
I mean, Hong Kong's been incredibly exciting this year. I mean, it's the revival of the Hong Kong Stock Exchange as a new listing venue has been particularly strong. What we're mainly seeing is Chinese listed firms deciding to list also on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. So what's called an A to H listing, A shares to H shares. And I think the reason for that is it's a way for big mainland listed Chinese businesses to attract perhaps a wider investment community in the Hong Kong Stock Exchange. I mean, you know, Hong Kong is probably still a more international exchange than Shanghai, and it gives these businesses perhaps a better second venue than, you know, which traditionally would have been the United States. But I'm not sure any Chinese company particularly wants to do a dual listing in America at the moment because of the trade tensions between China and the US. So actually, Hong Kong serves a pretty good purpose for a venue there. And there has been a lot of investment and people are pretty excited about what we're seeing in Hong Kong. So there's also obviously the DeepSeek story that happened at the beginning of the year, which has revolutionized sort of, I think, the way people think about Chinese technology and Chinese AI, that China has gone from being in the popular imagination very much a sort of second place, second runner to the US, to leading in lots of areas, and actually or at least to being a true AI rival. And I think people therefore want to have exposure to this story in China as well as the story in the United States. So I think that will continue to drive activity in Chinese technology and Hong Kong listings.
Okay. And finally, coming on to the US, it's a bit of a mixed bag there. There's a revival in equities despite the collapse following Liberation Day in April, particularly when it comes to emerging tech. Can you explain a bit more about that?
Yeah. So what's super interesting with the US is a theme that we spoke about earlier this year, and I think that people continue to talk about, which is this idea of the end of US exceptionalism and the idea that US stocks no longer hold the sort of sway that they perhaps did in the popular investor universe. Now, I think that might be an oversimplification and certainly something we've written and commented on. It perhaps feels a little bit more like an end of Magnificent Seven exceptionalism. And perhaps to an extent where if you're looking at your portfolio and looking where you're most likely to get equity growth. The Magnificent Seven, as fantastic as they are as businesses, probably don't provide the same growth profile that certainly don't provide the same growth profile that they did, and don't often now provide the same growth profile as other assets. Now, that has been feeding the investment flow into Europe. You know, for example, Europe was traditionally incredibly underowned and therefore has become undervalued. I mean, London UK stocks have been some of the most underowned since 2016. Therefore, now people are getting more excited potentially about investing in stocks like UK stocks and mainland European stocks, and particularly Germany, I mean, because of the stimulus that's going on there as well. So we're seeing bigger investment flow from the US into Europe. Now, I think what's also playing into that theme is the performance that we're seeing in some newly listed American assets, you know, particularly CoreWeave and Circle, you know, hyperscaling AI, CoreWeave and Circle, you know, stablecoin, playing really into the theme of the digitization of the US dollar. The reason these businesses, I think, have done so well is people are looking for the next great trillion-dollar giant. And therefore, if you're investing in these businesses at an early stage, the growth potential, even after a 200, 300%, you know, start, is still pretty substantial. So that feels like that's driving that trend of that incredible performance in some US IPOs. But as you can see, it isn't the case across the board. You know, other IPOs in the States have not performed so well, and we're still seeing big names struggle to come to market. You know, we haven't seen much movement in the case of Klarna, much movement in the case of StubHub, some other businesses that perhaps might be slightly more exposed in a economic downturn. I mean, certainly that's a theme that we're seeing a lot, is businesses that could be exposed to an economic downturn not doing so well in the equity markets and not being able to come to the IPO market. People are very worried about credit. I mean, your sovereign credit is becoming a major issue now, with people having eyeing up US debt. So I think what we really need to look at when we look at the US is it's not completely homogenous at the moment about how the IPO market is performing. You do have winners, you do have losers, and you have some markets that are going to be able to perform, companies that are going to be able to come to market still, even if things get worse, say Trump reinitiate some of the tariffs, which is highly possible, or you even have a slight downturn in the US economy. There are still going to be demand for some businesses, unless things completely fall off the cliff like they did straight after Liberation Day. And I'm not saying that can't happen again, but at some point these businesses will make it to market. There are other cases where businesses which might in any other time be perfectly good businesses, might on their own be perfectly good businesses, just don't suit the environment that we're about to enter. And I think that's what people are currently thinking and looking at when they're looking at their portfolio composition.
Sam, I'm afraid we've run out of time, but good to talk to you as always. Thanks very much. That was Sam Kerr, who is the global ECM editor. And just to point out, we're recording this on Thursday, the 10th of July. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Dealcast from Merger Market. I'm Juliana Needham. If you've enjoyed the podcast, please follow it. And if you're on an app that supports it, please give us a rating and review. To find out more about what we've been talking about on this episode, have a look at our show notes. Join us again next week.